إن الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا، من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلله فلا هادي له، وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله. يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله حق تقاته ولا تموتن إلا وأنتم مسلمون. يا أيها الناس اتقوا ربكم الذي خلقكم من نفس واحدة وخلق منها زوجها وبث منهما رجالا كثيرا ونساء، واتقوا الله الذي تساءلون به والأرحام، إن الله كان عليكم رقيبا. يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله وقولوا قولا سديدا. يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله وقولوا قولا سديدا يصلح لكم أعمالكم ويغفر لكم ذنوبكم، ومن يطع الله ورسوله فقد فاز فوزا عظيما. أما بعد، فإن أصدق الحديث كتاب الله وأحسن الهدي هدي محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم، وشر الأمور محدثاتها، فإن كل محدثة بدعة وكل بدعة ضلالة وكل ضلالة في النار. Afterwards, inshallah, we are going to proceed with our discussion related to the very important fatwa related to the issues that are correlated to marital relationship or purposely for women, for example, of which we are basically discussing about فتاوى هامة للمرأة المتزوجة. A very important rulings, very important clarifications to the married woman. So the woman is married, there are some of the guidelines that she is supposed to know the way to interact with her husband, the way to interact, the way to behave during their marital relationship. It is very important for a woman to know this kind of guidelines, of which this would be the 12th session or 13th session, if I could remember. Previously we had a kind of technical problem, and that's the reason why we have a kind of interval between the sessions. And as I also highlighted in other sessions, that we would be having some kind of interval with due reasoning related to the circumstances of that are related to the sessions and other factors also. So if we could remember, we discussed about حكم ربط الزوجة مع عشرة زوجها, like for a woman to avoid being in a relationship with her husband, will be the ruling on that. We have discussed on that also, and also a point related to that, that suppose if she avoid her husband with a reason that she is busy with other aspect of devotion, would that be accepted as a kind of reason or not? We discussed on that. So our today's point of regards is related to something that is related to the intercourse, which is حكم إفرازات المرأة بعد غسلها من الجماع. حكم إفرازات المرأة بعد غسلها من الجماع. The rulings for a woman's secretions after she has taken her bath. Meaning after she has taken bath from the sexual intercourse. So what we are going to discuss here is that what are the rulings? What would be the hukum if a woman experiences a kind of urethral secretion or vaginal secretion after the intercourse and even after she has taken the ritual bath, you know, as part of the basic decorum in the deen? It is a kind of mandate for both the two individuals, the husband and the wife, to take a bath after sexual intercourse. Without the bath, their prayer will not be accepted. So suppose they had a kind of sexual intercourse and they were all satisfied in that. So she went further to take her ghusl, to take her ritual bath. So after the ritual bath, she experienced a kind of secretion, vaginal secretion, or what we call urethral secretion. So what would be her hukum? Su'il al-Shaykh Muhammad Nasir al-Din al-Albani rahimahullah. Sheikh Muhammad Nasir al-Din al-Albani was asked, may the mercy of Allah be upon him, ما حكم إفرازات المرأة بعد الجماع؟ ما حكم إفرازات المرأة بعد الجماع؟ What is the ruling about the woman secretion after the intercourse؟ بعد أن تغتسل بحيث أنها في بعض الأحيان أن صلاتها بعد الجماع وبعد أن تغتسل يخرج منها بقية سوائل الجماع. Like for example, at times after she has taken the bath, she has taken the ritual bath, in the sense that her prayer timing would be after the intercourse, and after she has taken the bath, she experienced a kind of secretion. يخرج منها بقية سوائل الجماع. It comes from her body, from her urethra, from her vagina, بقيت سوائل الجماع. The remaining of the fluid which are related to the previous intercourse. فهل عليها إعادة الغسل والوضوء؟ Is it upon her? Is it on her that she must take a ritual bath again to repeat the ritual bath again? والوضوء and ablution. جزاكم الله خيرا. May God bless you with the verse. So here what the question is, the question was as how it was forwarded, as how it was asked to Sheikh Muhammad Nasir Din Al-Albani, as one of the greatest ulama of hadith in this century. He asked the Almighty to forgive his soul, to have mercy on him. He was a great treasure. He was a great alim. He's a person of knowledge. Nobody denied that. Allahu musta'an. He's a person with great reputations. So the question was, ما حكم إفرازات المرأة بعد الجماع؟ What is the hukum? What is the rulings about the female secretion after intercourse? بعد أن تغتسل, after she has taken the bath, بحيث أنها في بعض الأحيان أن صلاتها بعد الجماع. In the sense that sometime or at times her prayer would occur after the intercourse. Suppose maybe they had the intercourse between Maghrib and Isha. After Maghrib, before Isha. So she needs to perform Salat al-Isha. بعد الجماع after the marital relationship, after the sexual intercourse. وبعد أن تغتسل. And after she has taken the bath, after she takes the bath, meaning the ritual bath, يخرج منها بقية سوائل الجماع. It comes from her body, or it came out from her body, the remaining portion of the sexual secretion. فحل عليها إعادة الغسل. Is it upon her that she should retake her bath? She should repeat the ritual bath والوضوء, or to repeat her ablution, meaning that she has to repeat her ritual bath because she did not experience the secretion until after the ritual bath. But she has to go back and perform another bath. We know this usually happens to the females, as how some of the couples were mentioning. By them themselves, they said also, even to some of my sisters, for example, they used to be lazy sometime in taking bath. I don't mean ritual bath, even normal bath. Allah musta'an. It is a kind of difficult task sometime to a lady to retake a bath after something occur mysteriously. So about ritual bath that requires protocols, procedures, which is totally different with the normal bath. The normal bath, you can use the disinfectant, you can use soap, you can other issues like that. But the ritual bath purposely for ibadah, for devotion. For her ibadah to get accepted, she must perform a ritual bath in order to clear any kind of impurity, in order to clear her body away from those kind of secretion. So, what would be her condition? Is she going to repeat the ritual bath, or she is going to take an ablution? To perform an ablution is okay. We know there is a kind of hukum of which one of the Sahabi or one of the servant of the Rasul sallallahu alayhi wa sallam that emphasize that a person must repeat ablution when he has a kind of interval between his marital relationship with his wife. Suppose, for example, in a single night, they have multiple intercourse. So they can just take the bath at the end. So if there is a kind of interval, according to the ulama of jurisprudence, what they should hearken to is just ablution. They should, or he should, just repeat, he should perform ablution for each interval within a single night, for example, or within a kind of period. I'm not talking about women period, I'm talking about a period of time. So can this scenario be also applied in this kind of case? The cases are totally different. That one is related to the intercourse interval. So part of the easy aspect of the deal is that at the end of the intercourse, they must take the ritual bath. Sort of if there is an interval. If there is an interval, they must perform ablution. So how about if it is in a case of a woman, of whom at times she experienced secretions, and at times even, in the sense that she may perform the ritual bath for her devotional act in order to perform her prayer. But before the prayer, she would experience a kind of vaginal secretion or a kind of urethral secretion. So is she going to repeat that ritual bath to take another ghusl, or she is going to take ablution? So the questioner closed the question by saying, جزاكم الله خيرا. May God bless you with the best. In order, this is a kind of logic which is being utilized in asking questions. There are manners, there are etiquettes and the ethics in asking questions. If you fail to follow the guidelines, if you pose a question without following the ethics of asking questions, you may end up getting a kind of negative answer from the respondent, that is the responder, the one that will respond to the question, to the cleric or the scholar. So the teachers, the lecturers, the ulama, the clerics, they have virtues, they have merit, they have position. They are people of virtues. You should respect them, even if you are going to ask them a question. Because nowadays, you would see people, they don't know how to behave, they don't know how to interact with their seniors. They don't know how to interact with their teachers. Instead of them asking a question, they would forward the question in form of argument, like they are arguing, or they are going to criticize the teacher. You should behave well, you should know the man. Follow why asking a question. So if you ask a question, you should at least show your manner, your good manner at the end of the question, because you may end up opening the question with the kind of sentence that the listener will not be able to understand you properly. He may think you are criticizing him, but at the end of the question, try as such to come with something that show respect, or that clear that kind of understanding that you are just asking, you are not criticizing, as how it happened to one of the wives of the Rasulullah alayhi wasallam. One woman or one lady visited her and she went to ask a question. She just asked the question directly, هل المرأة الغسلة إذا هي احتملت? Not that hadith. The hadith was that ما بال المرأة تؤمر بقضاء الصلاة تؤمر بقضاء الصوم ولا تؤمر بقضاء الصيام أو كما قالت عائشة رضي الله عنها. So a woman asks her, what is the issue? Why is it that a woman is to disburse the fasting without being commanded to disburse the prayer? What is the reason behind that? You see, the question was worded directly. And that's the reason why Aisha radiallahu anha replied, Ahururiyati anti? Are you from Harura? Are you an extremist? Are you an extremist? Are you a person from Harura, from the Karijites? Because the way you put that equation, the way you interact, the way it would be addressed. So this question was forwarded to Sheikh Muhammad Nasiruddin Al-Albani in a good manner. It was forwarded in a polite manner, in a polite manner. And that's the reason why you would be surprised about the answer that he gave. He gave a simple answer, which is the absolute answer. فَعَجَابْ Thereby he answered, لا شيء عليها في ذلك مطلقة. لا شيء عليها, لا شيء عليها في ذلك مطلقا. Nothing on her. Absolutely. Meaning, لا شيء عليها, nothing on her. في ذلك مطلقة. In that, absolutely. Meaning, absolutely, there is nothing on her regarding that. So meaning, even if she sees the vaginal secretion, there is no need for her to take the ritual bath. there is no need for her to perform ablution. She can perform her prayer directly. I think this point is clear. So after the sexual intercourse, if a woman experiences vaginal secretion, even after taking her ritual bath or her ibadah, who had to perform the prayer, before the prayer, just a moment before the prayer, she experienced vaginal secretion or a kind of urethral secretion, there is nothing on that. There is nothing on her. Absolutely. She is to go directly to her prayer, and her prayer is a valid one. As far as that prayer of her maintain all the rules and regulations in the prayer. She has done that prayer with ikhlas and mutabah. She fulfilled all the do's and don'ts. The prayer is a valid one. That secretion is nothing. So I think this point is clear. And if you go back to that is our Fatawa Jidda, this question was asked to Sheikh Muhammad Nasiruddin Albani at then. You can find this question and the answer in Fatawa Jidda. Around, I think, Fatawa, that is the 25 Fatawa. So I think this point is clear. Whenever a woman sees vaginal secretion after the intercourse, after her ritual bath, there is nothing on her in performing her prayer. Nothing on her. She would just go directly to perform her prayer. That's the hukum. So someone can ask, why is it that there is vaginal secretion? Why does the woman experience vaginal secretion after the intercourse? It's supposed to be within the intercourse. And why is it that there is a kind of interval between the secretion? So we know normally female urethra expel fluid during sexual intercourse. It expels during the intercourse. Normally it happens or it occurs when a woman becomes sexually aroused, whether with orgasm or without the orgasm. So that's it. But the issue is that it can happen even after the intercourse. It can happen even after the intercourse, because even without orgasm, there would be a kind of vaginal secretion. For these issues, you can ask, you can consult your endocrinologist or the andrologist or the embryologist. You can consult them, or you can, that is, consult your primary healthcare providers. They would provide you with more details related to hormonal secretion in women, or that is the issues related to vaginal secretion. So this happens. It happened to the woman. They said this. They experience this kind of situations. At times it happens even for the menstruational woman. You can have a kind of woman that she attain an age of menopause. What it happens to, that is a minute individual, a woman would attain the age of menopause. She would think her period stopped. But when she traveled to another place or another location, due to the climate change or due to the weather or due to the diet that she consumed, then there would be a kind of change in her physiology. Her menstruation bleeding would return. you would experience some of the hormonal secretions also, like the FSH, follicular stimulating hormone, luteinizing hormone, all this. So this is one of the issue related to this, to summarize. Going further to another issue, that is Hukm al-Azal. Hukm al-Azal, the ruling about or behind al-Azl. You say al-Azl, that is external ejaculation. Hukm al-Azal, the ruling about external ejaculation. So what is external ejaculation? We would be able to understand, we would be able to know if we go directly to the questions. Or before that, external ejaculation is a kind of ejaculation that the husband will release his semen outside the body of the woman or in any other protective barrier. So al-azlu is subsegment of family planning. We'll get to discuss about this. So إلى الشيخ عبد العزيز بن باز رحمه الله. الشيخ عبد العزيز بن عبد الله بن باز was asked, may Allah's mercy be upon him, may Allah's mercy be with him, هل إراقة المنية خارج بيت المرأة بالنسبة للرجل المتزوج حرام؟ That إراقة المنية خارج فرج المرأة, releasing the sperm outside the female vagina, meaning for the husband to release his semen outside the female urethra or outside the female vagina, بالنسبة للرجل المتزوج, in the case of a married husband, a married person, haram, can it be considered as forbidden? Meaning, is it forbidden? Can it be considered as a forbidden act if a husband ejects or releases his semen outside his wife's vagina? Not inside, meaning the ejaculation happen externally, not internally. خاصة في حالة الحيض. Specifically, most especially, في حالة الحيض, in the menstruational period, meaning during the time when his wife is in her menses. This usually happens in some of the couples. They used to say it occurred. They used to get into this kind of act. أو الولادة, or during that, postnatal, meaning when a woman is about to give birth or after she has given birth. If we said الولادة, meaning childbirth. So you see, when a woman delivered her baby, according to the deen, she is supposed to finish the period of her nifas. At least, like, for example, when she reached those estimated days. So this issue is a kind of matter in fiqh. Some of the fuqaha, they said, suppose he give birth to her baby today or her child today. If the blood gets stopped, she is to perform her prayer, but for sexual intercourse till after that 40 days. So as we know, during for the females, during their menstruational bleeding or during their postnatal bleeding, they are not supposed to engage into any kind of devotional act. because even if they perform, that will not be accepted. These are the guidelines in the religion, because they are supposed to have a sigh of relief, because they are into a kind of condition. It pains. It pains. They know that. So they are to subjugate themselves away from devotional acts. And likewise, if possible, the marital relationship also, they should not, they should abstain. Because if intercourse occurs in this kind of situation, there would be a lot of complications. Even to today that we have all, there is availability of some of the materials that will be supported, or that would be served as a kind of supportive medium, or protectional medium. But the hukum is that no sexual intercourse, no devotional act during this period. So suppose it happened in this kind of period, that the woman is in her menses or during her childbirth. So in order for Islam to give relief to the woman, to protect the female rights, the deen provide, Islam decided to give some kind of bonus that a woman should try as such, and even the couples to abstain from this kind of relationship for a while, in order not to be a kind of burden to the woman. Suppose she is carrying a baby, or she delivered a baby with the kind of pains she experienced. So as you know, as for the deen conceded the females, the women as queens or as diamonds, they are to be protected. You get it? So that in this regards, specifically like during the time of her menses, if he decided to eject his semen outside her vagina, concluded by saying, "Afiduna afadakum Allah." Please give us an insight. May the Almighty suffice for you. May you give us the insight, so ask for the Almighty to suffice for you. This also a good manner in asking questions. So according to the deen, according to Islam, we learned that even if you are going to use the blue head questions in asking questions, if you are going to ask a question to your seniors, try as such to use some of the sentences, some of the words that would please such particular person, such particular personality, in order for the question to be understandable. So the question was forwarded to Sheikh Abdul Aziz bin Abdullah ibn Baz. He was a former Mufti of Mamlaka. He was also among the greatest scholars of the time in the field of fiqh, in the issues of Aqidah, Manhaj, and other fields of jurisprudence. So the question was asked, ejecting the semen outside the female vagina, outside the wife vagina, in the case of a person, in the case of a married person, a married husband, will it be considered as a forbidden act? Most especially during the time where or during the menstruational period of his wife or during child birth. So this is the question. Let us listen from the words or from the answer that was given by Ibn Baz rahimahullah. فأجاب, then he answered, إراقة المنية خارج الفرج إذا كان للمصلحة فلا بأس بذلك. Ejecting the semen, releasing the semen outside the vagina, إذا كان للمصلحة فلا بأس بذلك. If it is purposely for a vital reason, for a good reason, فلا بأس بذلك. There is no blame on that. There is no problem on such. So releasing the semen, the sperm outside the vagina, outside the female vagina, that is outside the wife vagina, إذا كان لمصلحة, if it is purposely for a reason, فلا بأس بذلك. There is no blame on that, on such. Maybe due to health issues, due to some of the reasons like family planning. Do you get it? Family planning is also adopted by the deen. We will get to discuss these issues. وَهَذَا يُسَمَّ الْعَزْلَ, and this is termed as الْعَزْلَ, external ejaculation. So external ejaculation, as far as Islam is concerned, is part of or one of the method of family planning, because like if you go back to 1400 years ago, during the lifetime of the Sahaba or during the lifetime of the Rasulullah, they don't have the present supportive materials, they don't have the present, that is today's protectional materials or protection materials, for example, of which I may mention the name of this kind of materials that are being utilized in family planning, like the contraceptive, even contraceptive drugs, for example, or medications. We know all this in the clinical aspect. Also, and the women, they know about this. So usually the issue of the family planning is adopted in the developed nations. And likewise, even in the underdeveloped nations, due to the issues with poverty. Allah musta'an. So let's go back to the discussion. I would discuss on this afterwards. So Sheikh Ibn Baz mentioned that إراقة المنية خارج الفرج إذا كان للمصلحة فلا بأس بذلك. Dejecting or releasing the semen outside the female vagina, إذا كان للمصلحة فلا بأس بذلك. If it is purposely for a reason, like due to a health reason or any other reason, we can say financial reason, even though for the financial reason I would get to discuss on these issues further. فلا بأس بذلك, there is no blame on that. وهذا يسمى العزلة, this is named or this is called as العزلة, هو العزم, meaning external ejaculation. وقد ثبت عن الصحابة رضي الله عنهم وأرضاهم, it was confirmed from the companions of the رسول صلى الله عليه وسلم, may the Almighty be pleased with them and he pleases them, أنهم كانوا يعزلون, they were also doing external ejaculation. There was hadith authentic which was narrated by Imam Ahmad in his Musnad, Imam Bukhari also, Imam Muslim, if I could recall. So that Sahabi, he mentioned that they were doing al-azlu, external ejaculation, during the time of the Rasulullah ﷺ, and the Rasul never stopped them. He did not ask them to stop, so he did not stop them from family planning. He did not stop them from external ejaculation. And we know for external ejaculation, the reason behind is either due to marital problems or financial problems, or due to the health issues, or they don't want the conception, or the husband doesn't want to let the wife to get the pregnancy. He don't want the pregnancy, and then all the couples, they don't want to have the pregnancy. So in such cases, these issues arise. Another clear advice that is been given, or that has to be given to such couples, is either for them to practice al-azlu, external ejaculation, in her marital relationship. Because this happens, Allah al-musta'an. I had one, Allah al-musta'an. This is a true live incident. One of the people that I know, his wife gave birth for each and every, Allah al-musta'an, within a year interval. And I get also, I realize, in some of the couples, after 2 years intervals. Allah al-musta'an, within 10 years, 5 children. Or within 10 years, 10 children. So Allah al-musta'an, this happens in some of the countries. In some of the countries, it's a kind of culture. Just 3 children are okay, or 2 children are okay. Allah al-musta'an, this happened. So there are reasons. If the reasons are related to the health issues, normally the ulama of fiqh, they consider this as a kind of reason. But inclining that towards financial issue, something different, obviously, because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala mentioned, وَكَأَيِّن مِّن دَابَّةٍ لَّا تَحْمِلُ رِزْقَهَا اللَّهُ يَرْزُقُهَا وَإِيَّاكُمْ. How many animals? How many creatures? How many living things? If we said, وَكَأَيِّن مِّن دَابَّةٍ, الدَّابَّة, whenever you listen الدَّابَّة in so many ayat, ayat signifies to mammals. Adab is referred to mammals. We know in animals we have mammals, we have different kind of animals, reptiles, arthropods, annelids, all those. We have different phylum, different genus, different species, and different kingdom. So وَكَأَيِّن مِّن دَابَّةٍ لَّا تَحْمِلُ رِزْقَهَا اللَّهُ يَرْزُقُهَا وَإِيَّاكُمْ. How many mammals? So many mammals which cannot carry her own provisions, but the Almighty provide to that mammal, and also to you also, meaning to you humans. So if you are saying mammals is referred to so many animals, even humans are included. So related to the Ulum al-Quran, there was extinction in the statement. وَكَأَيِّن مِّن دَابَّةٍ لَّا تَحْمِلُ رِزْقَهَا اللَّهُ يَرْزُقُهَا وَإِيَّاكُمْ. And you also. So here, the first statement referred to the mammals, meaning to the animal kingdom. And also, the discernment is also referred to, it is also applicable to the humans. So meaning, وَكَأَيِّن مِّن دَابَّةٍ لَّا تَحْمِلُ رِزْقَهَا اللَّهُ يَرْزُقُهَا وَإِيَّاكُمْ. How many mammals that cannot carry her own provision, but Almighty provide to such mammal, and you also, I mean to humans also. You know, monkeys are mammals, human beings are mammals, the rabbits are mammals also. For example, The rats, for example, the bunny rats, for example, albino rats, all this are mammals. Humans also are mammals. So if the statement was stopped, وكأي من دابة لا تحمل رزقها الله يرزقها وإياكم, it is sufficient. But to give more emphasis, it was mentioned وإياكم, and you also. So meaning, God provide or provides provisions to the animals and also to the humans. He supplies for animals and also he supplies for humans. So in this, what would we understand for provisions, for sustenance? We should know the power of sustenance is not just in the hands of animals or in the hands of humans. It is something that it portion, or it is in the hands of the Almighty. So if you rely totally to animals for sustenance, there would be a kind of deficiency. The Almighty can try you. And likewise, if you rely totally to humans also, there would be a kind of deficiency. And likewise, even in farming, subsistence or subsist system, that is what we termed as subsistence or subsystem farming. Although the two terminologies differ, subsistence and subsystem, all these are two methods of agriculture. For example, like for a person to combine raising animals and like for example cultivation of crops with raising of animals, and in the other terminology, like cultivating different varieties of crops like cereals, vegetables and fruits, for example, or cultivating in land and cultivating in inland. All these are different systems regarding farming. So we are to understand for sustenance or provisions are not totally in the hands of humans. If God, if the Almighty say no to any provision, that particular provision is termed to get seized. It would be stopped definitely. And likewise, there would be a kind of situation like the hadith, authentic hadith, Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam mentioned, لو كنتم تتوكلون على الله حق توكله لرزقكم الله كما يرزق الطير تغدو خماسا وتروح بطانا. In one of the loves, لو كنتم تتوكلون على الله حق توكله لرزقكم الله كما يرزق الطير تغدو خماسا وتروح بطانا. In one of the love, يغدو خماسا ويروح بطانا. But the most authentic narration is that which would come with تغدو خماسا وتروح بطانا, because الطير is a kind of الطير is a kind of مذكر, but is also referred to مؤنث. So if you are to rely to the Almighty, He would bless you, He would provide for you, would provide sustenance unto you, as how He provide to the birds, as how He provide to the birds, like to the chickens, for example, or to the dove. تغدو خماسا وتروح بطانا. It would awake in the morning in a condition of starvation, without food, but it would reach to the time of evening, but it would return while being belly feeded, meaning the life of a bird is a kind of lesson. The zoologist, they knew about this. A bird would wake up without any food. The bird would fly in the morning in a condition of starvation and hunger. When it returns back to the home, it would return in a condition of satisfaction. Her abdomen is well feeded. She gets her sustenance, her resources. So one thing that we would be able to understand is that for sustenance, we have to rely on something. But we should not rely totally. And this is one of the problems that we are experiencing today. Someone would say we have to rely upon agriculture. The botanists, they knew that at times there would be a kind of mosaicism in the crops or something like that. A kind of pandemic, for example. So Allah musta'an, this happened. So for you to get sustenance, you have to rely upon something and you have to do something. For the bird, it flies. Suppose if the bird didn't fly, how will it get her life sustenance? How will it get the food? So she utilizes a kind of energy in order to get another energy, in order to get the food. So this is one of the things that we should know. Yes, there is no problem with the reliance, but you have to do something. You have to offer a kind of hard work. So that's one of the issues related to this. So Allah al-Musta'an, financial reason in terms of fiqh cannot be well accepted. We know raising a child requires a kind of significant amount of resources. One of the resources to raise a child is the time. You have to give time to the children, to your children, to the child. You have to give the time in order to look over their situation. And also, the second factor is social. You must let your children to be socialized. Otherwise, they would become internally agonized, or they would become spiritually deaf or dumb, without knowing the world. You must let them socialize in a kind of appropriate manner, in a manner that doesn't violate the legal rules, the policies, the civil right, and the divine revelations. Another factor is the financial resources. You must provide the financial resources to that particular child that you are willing to give birth to. Because you must to purchase all the daily needs, the food, the meal. You have to provide for the education of that child. Also, one of the basic important resources is the environment. You must to provide a kind of convention, pleasant environment to that child. You must know the kind of environment to provide for your child. It requires an optimum environment, not a kind of chaotic environment. Do not allow your child to be with the extremists or to be with the rascals. So all the climate with good climate, environment with good resources. So this is one of the issues that we should know. These are the basic four factors. The time, social, That is the time, the social amenities, the financial resources, environmental resources. So health is included in the social amenities. So it's one of the issues. And the issue of the deen and religion is included in the environmental, that is our resources. Wallahu al-musta'an. As I mentioned, we must let the child to grow or to live in a kind of conducive environment that would be pleasant to that child. Because a lot of the problems that we are experiencing today are related to this kind of issues. So these are the reasons. As I mentioned, for the financial reason, it is not well accepted, because financial resources are related to provisions, are related to sustenance, as I quoted some of the ayat to summarize. So also the social amenities, since when he is in the childhood, you need to like buy all those kind of social amenities, like the toys. For example, we know there is la'uba, like the hadith of Aisha radiallahu anha, and those kind of issues. Good water, pure water, all those. Good environment. You must get good home to live in order to raise your child in a proper manner. These are some of the reasons. So these reasons can call towards external ejaculation, purposely for family planning. So Sheikh bin Baz was mentioning, وَقَدْ سَبَتَ عَنِ الصَّحَابَةَ رَضِيَ اللَّهُ عَنْهُمْ وَأَرْضَاهُمْ أَنَّهُمْ كَانُوا يَعْدِلُونَ. It is confirmed from the Sahaba, may the Almighty be pleased with them, وَأَرْضَاهُمْ, and He pleases them, أَنَّهُمْ كَانُوا يَعْدِلُونَ. They were also doing external ejaculation. وَقَدْ أَكَرَهُمُ النَّبِيُّ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ وَقَدْ أَكَرَهُمُ النَّبِيُّ عَلَيْهِ الصَّلَاةُ وَالسَّلَامُ. And the Prophet confirmed them. He reaffirmed to that for them. قَدْ أَكَرَهُمْ. He confirmed them on that and such. He gave a kind of reclamation. He gave a kind of anticipation to that. That no problem with such. عليه الصلاة والسلام. فإذا دعت الحاجة إلى الأصل. When a reason call towards external ejaculation, when there is a reason for doing external ejaculation, بأن يريك منيه خارج الفرد, like for him to release his semen outside the vagina, إما لكونه لا يرغب في الحمل ذلك الوقت, whether for him being not in the need of the conception in that period of time. He don't want the pregnancy at that moment. He don't want his wife to conceive at that particular moment. أو لما ذكره السائل من كونه محرم عليه الجماع. Or what the questioner mentioned, like in a kind of condition where the intercourse would become a forbidden act, like when the wife is in her menses or she's in her postnatal bleeding, meaning during childbirth or after childbirth, during prenatal or postnatal situation. فَيَدَأُ ذَكِرَهُ حَوْلَ فَرْدِهَا, like for him to mount his penis close to her vagina, meaning outside. وَيَرِيكَ الْمَنِيَ خَارِجَ وَلَا يُجَامَعُ, of him releasing the semen without ejaculating, meaning without, that is doing the intercourse. فَلَا بَعْثَ بِذَلِكَ, there is no blame in that, there is no problem with that. لِأَنَّ الْمُحَرَّمُ هُوَ الْجِمَعُ, because that which was forbidden, لأن المحرم عليه, لأن المحرم هو الجماع, لأن المحرم هو الجماع, because that which is being forbidden is the intercourse at that particular moment, at that particular period of time. So when she is in her period, in her menses, it is forbidden to the husband to have a kind of internal ejaculation, internal intercourse with his spouse or with his wife, for example. So I think with this we'd be able to understand the concept of which Father Ibn Baz rahimahullah clarified the issue much more. فالمقصود أن السنة في حق الزوج إذا كانت المرأة حائل أو نفساء أن يباشرها من وراء الإذار. فالمقصود that which is being recommended. فالمقصود the purpose أن السنة في حق الزوج. The jurisprudential ruling. The sunnah fi haqq al-zawj, the husband right, إذا كانت المرأة حائل, إذا كانت المرأة حائل, when the wife is in her menses, أو نفساء, or she is in her postnatal bleeding, أيباشرها من وراء الإذار. For him to relate with her, to have a romance with her, behind the inner way, أو من وراء السراويل, or behind the front, not inside but behind. ونحو ذلك, and similar to that. What is ونحو ذلك, and similar to that? Like for example, with the aid of using protective barrier. Even though Sheikh Ibn Baz did not mention such, but ونحو ذلك and similar to that, the hukum is based on that, going in that is imbuing the statement of fuqaha related to this. لكن لو باشرها من داخل الإذار, suppose if he like, but or yet لو باشرها من داخل الإذار, if he has romance with her, داخل الإذار, through the inner way or inside the inner way, ومن داخل السراويل or through the front, فلا حرج في ذلك. There is no problem with that if it is just romance, no intercourse. لكن ليس له أن يجامع, but he is not supposed to have sex with her, meaning to have the intercourse with her, بل يحرم عليه الجماع, but rather the sexual intercourse is forbidden to him in such situation. سواء أنزل أم لم ينزل, whether he releases or he doesn't, whether he releases or he did not, يجب أن يبتعد عن الجماع. It is mandatory, obligatory on him to abstain from the intercourse. So that's how it is. A person should abstain in that kind of situation because she is bleeding and that there are other contaminations like the HPV, human papilloma virus, and other microorganisms. So he may get infected. He may get infected with gonorrhea and other viruses also. So there is hikmah or wisdom behind this kind of ruling as far as the deen is concerned. And likewise when she's in her postnatal bleeding, she's bleeding, there is high chances of contamination. The rate of infection increases during her bleeding period. So, but if the romance is behind the inner way, like with her clothing, without moving her inner ways, if it is romance without the sexual intercourse, no problem with that. ولكن الأفضل ولكن الأفضل but the best and the better option. ولكن الأفضل but the best والأولى and the most common والأهوط and the most virtuous, meaning the most significant. So what he says, there is no problem is if the husband has romance with his wife behind the inner ways without clothing, and even if she is in her, suppose for example she is in her period, whether it is menses or postnatal bleeding, he can have romance with her but without penetrating his penis into her private part, in order to save himself from contamination and to save her also from danger. And looking towards the kind of situation, the legislator decided to forbid these issues. So romance is allowed, but not sexual intercourse? No, because she's in her menses, he's in her postnatal bleeding. So these are some of the guidelines that are related to the to this kind of matters. ولكن الأفضل له ولكن الأفضل له ولكن الأفضل له. But yet the best for him والأولى and the most common والأحوط and the most significant, أن يبتعد عن هذا, for him to distance himself from that. Because emotion can move him to a kind of limitation where he never expect. He may end up inserting his private part into her private part. لئلا يدفعه الشيطان إلى الجماع المحرم. So that the شيطان should not trick him, should not push him towards the kind of relationship that is being forbidden. Because لأن الشيطان يجري من ابن آدم مجرى الدم. شيطان move circulate in the body of human like through the blood circulation, majoradami, like the circulation of the blood. That's how the shaitan move in the body of human. So he may end up not controlling himself. So in order to avoid this, then there would be a kind of saddul lizari'ah, and this is the basic condition in the thought of the Malikites. ولهذا أمر النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم. Due to this, the Prophet and mercy of Allah be upon him commanded أمر النساء أن يعتذرن عند إرادته المباشرة. He commanded his wives, he used to command his wives to cover their body, to get shrouded, to cover their body, to wear their clothing when he want to have romance with them, alayhi salatu wa salam, peace and mercy of Allah be upon him, meaning when they are in their period, if he want to be close to them, he want to have relationship with them, not that is something related to ejaculation, marital relationship, he want to be close to them, so in order to give a kind of lesson, he command his wife to shroud them, that is to cover, to put their proper clothing, because shaitan can trigger this person, even though shaitan has nothing, has no any problem in the heart of the Rasul sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, because the angels they performed a surgery to the Rasul sallallahu alayhi wa sallam since his early age, and they removed the portion of shaitan from his heart. When the Rasul sallallahu alayhi wa sallam was at the house of Halimah al-Sa'diyah when he was in his childhood, We know قصة شق الصدر. So, but in order to show us the lesson, he command his wife to cover, to put their proper clothing when he want to be close to them. If they are in that kind of period. هذا هو الأفضل. This is the best. وهذا هو الأهول. And this is the most significant. So I think due to the time limitation, we can stop in this point. So in the next session, we are going to discuss about أحكام في الملامسة والمداعبة, the rules related to romance and excitement, that is the issue related to the intercourse. So this kind of issues would be discussed in the next session. And the first point would be آداب والمواضع الآداب والمواضع المشروعة لاستمتاع أحد الزوجين ببعضهما وببعضهما. The ethics, the etiquettes, the morals, and the points of legislation in satisfying one spouse to another. Meaning, what I mean is that what are the morals, the etiquettes to be followed when the husband is going to satisfy his sexual need, or the wife is going to satisfy her sexual need from her husband. So these are the points that we are going to discuss. The religion comes with all the requirements. In everything, it provides guidelines. Because normally the human should be under guidelines, under policies. Otherwise, the human without policies, without guidelines, he would be a kind of hazardous being. The human would become a dangerous person without running under policies or guidelines. And likewise, even regarding the issues of marital relationship, there are guidelines, there are policies, there are rights. And the human right, they are the rights related to, that is marital rights also. Issue of gender equality is something different. Issue of abortion is another thing. Like these days, many people are discussing on these issues. Is abortion a right or not? Is abortion a privacy or not? And that's one of the issues. Now people are discussing. People are discussing. People are having a kind of dispute, a kind of argument. Or it is a kind of broadly argument. Is privacy a right or not? If you consider privacy a right, then there are other issues that can serve as a kind of objection to your statement. So there are points, evidences to support that motion, and there are points and evidences to oppose that motion. And it is of recent, very recently, one of the presidents make mention, he said in their country, he mentioned the idea of right to privacy has no place in such country. Maybe there are some of the reasons behind that. So reasons, valid reasons can change the situations of other points. If you consider privacy is a right, then the world of today comes with so many issues that can come against such statement. And if you consider privacy is not a right, there are other problems. So there would be a kind of balancing. That's how he mentioned the idea of right to privacy has no place in that country, or in the country. So you see, the issue is that in anything there would be guidelines and there would be policies and there would be legal. Source of guidance to others, and that is so with the issues of abortion or sperm donation or issues of these issues related to the privacy we discuss in the next. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.